This is Brian Cheffins. I'm continuing with the lectures for the LLM course on corporate governance. We're focusing now on the first major topic that we're considering in relation to the course, which is an overview of key corporate governance matters. And the subject matter of this lecture is tiers of regulation. The corporate governance arrangements that arise in particular companies are a product of a combination of market forces and regulation. Company law is the most visible form of regulation that impacts on corporate governance. In the United Kingdom, the content of company law is determined by statutes such as the Companies Act 2006 and case law principles that govern the internal affairs of companies. Parts 2 and 3 of this course focus primarily on company law rules relevant to corporate governance. Correspondingly, other than pointing out that the Companies Act 2006 is administered by the Department for Business, Energy, and Industrial Strategy, known as DBIS, what I will do in this lecture is draw attention to other tiers of regulation that are important in a corporate governance context. The first additional tier of regulation I will discuss is the corporate constitution, which each UK-based premium listed company will have. As Section 17 of the Companies Act 2006 indicates, the corporate constitution is comprised primarily of the Articles of Association. Section 33 of the Companies Act 2006 specifically states that a company's constitution constitutes a contract that binds the company and its shareholders. This contract will regulate internal relations as between a company's directors and shareholders. The Articles of Association will deal with topics such as the conduct of shareholder meetings and the appointment and powers of the Board of Directors. In the unlikely event that a company is incorporated without its own Articles of Association, then, by virtue of Section 20 of the Companies Act 2006, a default set of model articles set out in the form of schedules to the Act will apply. The relevant schedules provide separate sets of model articles for private companies and PLCs, respectively. Since a set of articles will almost always be registered as part of the incorporation process, these model articles rarely apply in their entirety to companies. Still, since the model articles illustrate how companies commonly deal with issues the articles regulate, the model set of articles for PLCs will be referred to for illustrative purposes at various points throughout the course. A crucial issue that the Articles of Association will deal with is the allocation of managerial control in a company. This occurs because the Companies Act 2006 does not stipulate who is authorized to manage companies incorporated under the Act. In UK companies, the almost universal practice is for the articles to vest managerial power in the hands of the Board of Directors. This is reflected in Article 3 of the Model PLC Articles. It stipulates that subject to the articles, quote, the directors are responsible for the management of the company's business, for which purpose they may exercise all the powers of the company, unquote. When a company has a clause in its articles equivalent to this provision, the shareholders will not, as a matter of general principle, be able to interfere with the exercises of the Board of Directors' managerial powers. The automatic self-cleansing filter syndicate and Cunningham case, a 1906 decision of the English Court of Appeal, stands as authority for this proposition. Despite this, a company's shareholders do not lack mechanisms they can use to influence how a company is going to be run. The lectures on shareholder rights and remedies will canvas these. The FCA handbook constitutes the second regulatory tier that we will consider here. This document is administered by the Financial Conduct Authority, operating as the UK Listing Authority, or UKLA. The definition of UKLA in the glossary to the FCA handbook confirms that the FCA generally operates as the UKLA when dealing with the affairs of listed companies. As mentioned, companies on the official list are traded on the main market of the London Stock Exchange and are governed by the FCA handbook, which encompasses the listing rules and disclosure and transparency rules. As we have seen, quota companies can either have a premium or a standard listing, and this course focuses on quoted companies with a premium listing. With listed companies that have a premium listing, the listing rules and the disclosure and transparency rules regulate the conduct of key transactions and impose substantial disclosure obligations. If a company breaches provisions in either the listing rules or the disclosure and transparency rules, the UKLA is entitled to sanction the company and or its directors by way of a fine and also by way of a censure, which amounts to a public verbal warning. The authority to impose these sanctions arises from Section 91 of the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000, and is spelled out in paragraph 1.5.3 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules. Another sanction available to the FCA for breaching the FCA handbook is to shut down temporarily trading in a company's shares. For instance, under Section 89 sub L of the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000, the UKLA, which is deemed to be the quote-unquote competent authority for the purposes of the provision, can suspend or prohibit trading in a company's securities if it has reasonable grounds for suspecting an applicable transparency obligation has been infringed. The UKLA can go further in this regard by displacing a company's status as a listed company. This can be done through a suspension or cancellation of a company's listing. Section 77 sub 2 of the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000 says the power to suspend a listing can be derived from the listing rules. With suspension of a listing, Listing Rule 5.1.1 says this can occur if the smooth operation of the market is jeopardized. Paragraph 5.1.2 provides guidance on when a suspension of a listing will be justified. Listing Rule Paragraph 5.2.1 deals with the cancellation of a listing. It says this can occur when there are special circumstances that preclude normal regular dealings in securities. Paragraph 5.2.2 identifies circumstances where the cancellation of a listing will likely be justified, including a suspension of trading lasting more than 6 months. Paragraphs 5.1.2 and 5.2.2 of the listing rules draw attention to a feature of the FCA handbook that merits elaboration. This is that not all provisions give rise to sanctions in the event of breach. This is because they are not all rules listed companies or financial services organizations are obliged to follow. The categorization of provisions is signaled by letters in the left-hand margin of the listing rules and the disclosure and transparency rules. The key categories for the purposes of this course are rules, signified by an R, guidance, signified by a G, and evidence, signified by E. As the Reader's Guide to the FCA Handbook indicates, rules typically create binding obligations on listed companies or financial services firms that are being regulated, a contravention of which can give rise to enforcement action. In contrast, guidance and evidence provisions do not spell out obligations parties have, but instead are designed to explain the implications of the rules and provide a form of safe harbor for those seeking to comply. Paragraphs 5.1.2 and 5.2.2 of the listing rules both fall into the guidance category, given their G annotation. When the UK was part of the European Union, Under the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000, the UK listing authority was deemed to be the competent authority to make corporate governance rules satisfying requirements to implement EU directives. Section 89O provides for this. The listing rules and disclosure and transparency rules indeed contain numerous provisions derived from EU directives that are relevant to governance. Given Section 89O, it might be assumed that the FCA is in charge of the UK Corporate Governance Code. That is not the case. Instead, this document, the code, which has always been purely domestically generated, falls under the purview of the Financial Reporting Council. The definition of the UK Corporate Governance Code in the FCA handbook glossary acknowledges this point. As mentioned, the FRC may be replaced in due course by the Audit, Reporting, and Governance Authority. With the UK Corporate Governance Code, disclosure is a key feature, as it is indeed with corporate governance generally in the UK. The departure point with disclosure is Part 15 of the Companies Act 2006, which requires companies to prepare annually a set of accounts, an annual report, and a director's report. Companies, in turn, must distribute these documents to shareholders and file them publicly. Companies quoted on the London Stock Exchange are required to, in turn, to discuss their corporate governance arrangements in their annual report and their annual accounts. The obligation to disclose corporate governance arrangements is partly in place due to Part 7.2 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules. This was promulgated to comply with EU directives concerning company accounts. Paragraph 7.2.1 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules requires an issuer, a listed company in this particular context, to include a corporate governance statement in the report directors prepare annually for shareholders. Paragraph 7.2.9 provides companies with the option to include the statement in a separate report. Regardless of the precise location of the documentation, Disclosure and Transparency Rule 7.2.2 stipulates that a listed company must identify the corporate governance code to which the company is subject. For companies with a premium listing, this will be the UK Corporate Governance Code. Companies with a premium listing are required to adhere to additional important corporate governance disclosure requirements, and namely reporting on the manner in which they have applied the UK Corporate Governance Code and explain significant variations from its guidance. Paragraphs 9.8.5.6 sub 5 and sub 6 of the listing rules impose this obligation. Paragraph 9.1.1 of the listing rules indicates only companies with a premium listing have to take this step. It's important to remember that listed companies are not as obliged as such to comply with what the UK Corporate Governance Code provides. Instead, matters operate on a comply or explain basis. To understand how comply or explain functions, it must be kept in mind that the code contains two basic guideline categories, principles and provisions. As the introduction to the code indicates, the provisions are more detailed. The comply or explain nature of the UK Corporate Governance Code is clearest with provisions, which are dealt with in paragraph 9.8.6 sub 6 of the listing rules. As the introduction to the revised code says at page 1, the code does not set out a rigid set of rules. Instead, it offers flexibility through comply or explain provisions. The introduction elaborates further at page 2. An alternative to complying with a provision may be justified in particular circumstances based on a range of factors, including the size, complexity, history, and ownership structure of a company. Explanation should set out the background, provide a clear rationale for the action the company is taking, and explain the impact that the action has had. With respect to what companies have disclosed, it then falls to shareholders to evaluate how a company has explained any departures from provisions in the UK Corporate Governance Code and decide what, if anything, should be done to foster a change in approach. The introduction to the code describes how shareholders should proceed, saying at page 2, investors should engage constructively and discuss with the company any departures from recommended practice. The introduction goes on to say, shareholders have every right to challenge companies' explanations if they are unconvincing. On the other hand, shareholders are urged not to carry out evaluations in a mechanistic way and are instructed to pay due regard to companies' individual circumstances. Turning now to principles set out in the UK Corporate Governance Code, Listing Rule paragraph 9.8.6 sub 5 says a listed company must provide a statement in its annual report discussing how the code principles have been applied. As the introduction to the code says, paragraphing paragraph 9.8.6 sub 5 in the process, the statement should be framed in a manner that would enable shareholders to evaluate how the principles have been applied. The introduction goes on to say, reporting should cover the application of the principles in the context of the particular circumstances of the company and how the board has set the company's purpose and strategy, met objectives, and achieved outcomes through the decisions it has taken. The listing rules do not explicitly give companies the option to say that they have not applied the principles, unlike with provisions. The principles arguably may be mandatory, therefore, in a way that provisions are not. However, even if the principles are non-negotiable, they are expressed in general terms which allows for wide latitude in their implementation. Indeed, it may be theoretically possible for a listed company to acknowledge a principle, say that no action has been taken, and explain why. This explain rather than comply response likely could meet the listing rule paragraph 9.8.6 sub 5 requirement that a company must say how a principle has been applied. The FCA has not indicated to the contrary in its administration of the UK Corporate Governance Code. With the corporate governance statement that the disclosure that paragraph 7.2.1 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules requires listed companies to include in the director's report, paragraph 7.2.3 sub 1 sub B retains for listed companies the comply or explain option. It provides that an issuer that departs from the corporate governance code that applies to it should explain what parts of the code it has departed from and provide reasons for doing so. Paragraph 7.2.5, 7.2.7, and 7.2.8A of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules are of a somewhat different character in that there is no comply or explain aspect. Instead, these provisions impose straightforward requirements to make disclosures concerning corporate governance arrangements in place. Paragraph 7.2.5 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules deals with internal control and risk management systems, which essentially are mechanisms companies put in place to ensure that their internal accounting regime operates properly. Paragraph 7.2.5 says the corporate governance statement that is to accompany the annual director's report must describe these arrangements. Paragraph 7.2.7 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules obliges listed companies to describe in the corporate governance statement the composition of their administrative, management, and supervisory bodies and their committees. This terminology is European Union code for the board of directors and its committees. The EU terminology is used because paragraph 7.2.7 was originally introduced to implement an EU directive. Disclosure and Transparency Rule paragraph 7.2.8a goes on to require listed companies to divulge the approach that they take with regard to fostering diversity in the boardroom. We will consider diversity in the boardroom when we look at non-executive directors. It is worth reiterating with the UK Corporate Governance Code that non-compliance with the principles and provisions does not constitute a breach of the listing rules. Instead, the operative obligation is disclosure. So there will be a breach of paragraph 9.8.6 sub 5 of the listing rules if a listed company, in a narrative statement dealing with the code principles, fails to provide sufficient information for the shareholders to evaluate how the principles have been applied. Similarly, there will be an infringement of paragraph 9.8.6 sub 6 of the listing rules if a listed company breaches code provisions and then either fails to disclose this or fails to give any reasons for non-compliance. In addition, quoted companies must fulfill the mandatory disclosure requirements under Part 7.2 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules. If there is a breach of the corporate governance-related disclosure obligations in the listing rules or the Disclosure and Transparency Rules, a fine is one potential punishment. As mentioned, Section 91 of the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000 is the relevant provision, with Section 91 sub 1 specifically authorizing the UK Listing Authority to impose this penalty against an issuer. Under Section 91 sub 2 of the Financial Services and Markets Act, a director of a listed company which has infringed the listing rules can also be fined if he or she was knowingly concerned in the contravention. A fine will not necessarily be imposed, however, if a company fails to disclose in accordance with paragraph 9.8.6 sub 5 or sub 6 or part 7.2 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules. Instead, the FCA has, as mentioned, the option of simply censuring, issuing a public reprimand. Section 91 sub 3 of the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000 provides for this option. Other potential sanctions for failure to engage in required corporate governance disclosures are the prohibiting of trading in a company's shares and suspending or canceling a company's listing entirely. Prohibition of trading can occur pursuant to Section 89L sub 2 of the Financial Services and Markets Act 2000, given that the failure to disclose in accordance with paragraphs 9.8.6 sub 5 and 6 of the listing rules, or comply with the corporate governance disclosure requirements in Part 7.2 of the Disclosure and Transparency Rules, will constitute a breach of what is referred to in the statute as a transparency obligation. With suspension of a listing, paragraph 5.1.2 of the listing rules offers examples of instances where the FCA can do this, and failing to comply with paragraphs 9.8.6 sub 5 and sub 6 should fall within the scope of examples 1 and 2 in paragraph 5.1.2. If a listing is suspended for more than 6 months, an outright cancellation might well follow under paragraph 5.2.1 of the listing rules together with paragraph 5.2.2 sub 3. The comply or explain model is a vestige of the UK Corporate Governance Code's self-regulatory pedigree. As mentioned, this document embraces work carried out by the Cadbury, Greenbury, and Hampel committees, each of which was set up on a private basis. Moreover, the corporate governance codes resulting from the deliberations were set out in the listing rules when the listing rules were administered by the London Stock Exchange, itself a private body. The 2009 Walker Report explicitly acknowledged the self-regulatory underpinnings of Complier Explained, saying, "The origin of this construct has been the long-held view that imposing more prescriptive requirements up front would bring increased risk of inflexibility, box-ticking, conformity, and compliance cost." The UK Corporate Governance Code's Complier Explained regime aside, the self-regulatory aspect with corporate governance is now largely absent. The Financial Services Authority, which began administering the listing rules operating in the UK Listing Authority in the year 2000, was a governmental body, taking over from the London Stock Exchange in this respect. It's the FSA's successor, the FCA, is also a governmental body. Moreover, while the Cadbury, Greenberry, and Hample reports on corporate governance were the product of private initiatives, the UK government commissioned the more recent such reports on corporate governance, namely the Higgs Report and the Walker Report. The Corporate Governance Green Paper Reform Project was purely a governmental operation. A trend accompanying the switch away from self-regulation has been growing complexity of code documentation. The 1992 Code of Best Practice, created in accordance with the recommendations of the Cadbury Committee, contained 19 Complier Explained provisions. Expansion then became the order of the day. The 2016 version of the UK Corporate Governance Code contained more than 40 principles, including what were known as supporting principles, and around 50 provisions. The FRC sought to curtail this trend in favor of continued growth with its latest revision of the code. The FRC said at page 2 in the 2017 report that set out a draft version of the revised code, so it could be commented upon, "We have looked to shorten and sharpen the revised code. One step taken in this regard, as the FRC indicated, was to remove the idea or remove supporting principles, which had been in place in addition to main principles." The final 2018 version of the code correspondingly only contains principles and provisions. The 2018 version of the code indeed appears to be shorter than its 2016 predecessor, given that there are now only 18 principles and 41 provisions. On the other hand, many of the provisions are complex. It's typical for a single provision to be four or more sentences in length and to deal with multiple themes. Correspondingly, the range of topics a company must take into account may, if anything, be more substantial than it was a decade ago.